This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9. I'm Christine Wong. I am in the studio with
Arvini Varanj.
Today we're talking all about consumer research and how it is not just a luxury. In fact, less than 40% of marketers employ consumer research to drive their marketing decisions, when in reality, consumer research should serve as the foundation of every business. So how do you keep on top of ever-changing consumer behavior and preferences after nearly 3 years of unprecedented disruption and this continual state of uncertainty? Hopefully, we get to answer some of those questions today. And if you want to get in touch with us and join us about this topic, you can reach us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. So I think it's safe to say long gone are the days where only price was a leading factor in consumer purchase decisions, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, price still plays a role. But today, multiple factors are at play, such as brand differentiation, reputation, and customer-centric return policies, for example. But it's really hard to read a customer's mind, right? It's also challenging for retailers to figure out where they fit when compared with their competition, especially for those who are just starting out. It can feel like a lot of decisions are made on guesswork or instinct.
Yeah.
So market research or consumer research can remove a lot of this uncertainty by helping you understand your industry, your target customer, your competition, and your product. And when you understand all that, your chances of success are a lot greater.
So I think it'll be helpful to get to the really base level question, right? Like, what is market research in the first place? So if we look in the dictionary, the definition of market research is the study of a target market, including companies and people involved, to understand its needs and preferences. So essentially what that means is it gives you an understanding of the cultural, societal, socioeconomic, geographic, and personal makeup of your target customers. It will, in essence, help you understand whether there's a demand for your product, how big that demand is, and who is generating the demand. And among other essential details, it will also provide you with data on your target shoppers' buying power, stuff like shopping preferences, and relationship with your competitors. So hopefully with all that information, you'll be able to create products that provide solutions, market to consumers effectively, and increase your chances for success. Hopefully,
right? Mm. So it sounds like market research is fairly important. And in fact, the 2022 Shopify Future of Commerce report reveals that availability of marketplaces and advancements in technology have lowered the barrier to entry, right? So more retailers are entering the market and competition is only going to grow. Mm-hmm. So the idea is market research can help you not just effectively grow brand awareness, but also stand out and make loyal customers. And there's a lot more as well that market research can help you with, including getting a better understanding of your target market, right? Because market research gives you insights on the size of the market you're targeting, how competitive it is, and where there's room for improvement. So this information can help you create what's known as a SWOT analysis. So that stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, which in turn should help you devise some strategies to even enter the market effectively at all.
And this this SWOT analysis also gives you a strong grip on your target buyer. So with market research, you can learn where and how to find your customers and how to present your product to them, which is important. With the insights that you gather, you can work out audience resonating marketing strategies, smart product pricing, and effective brand positioning. Also, by digging into consumer shopping preferences and interests, you can validate and refine your product ideas, which I think is important, right? Mm. So you keep changing on the flow. In fact, consumer feedback on sample products and new concepts can help you launch products already proven to succeed. And the final point is, you can use the research to stand out from competitors, which is what everyone wants to do, I'm guessing. Competitor analysis as part of retail market research tells you how fierce the competition is and what others are doing to market and retain their buyers. It also reveals your competitors' product quality and shortcomings, helping you design better products and customer experiences, so understanding their weakness, basically. And understanding the competition then helps you to figure out, you know, just how to differentiate your brand and develop a unique selling proposition to stand out from the crowd and attract your niche customers.
Yeah. So obviously, that sounds like a lot. Mm. it sounds like a lot of work. So where do you even get started with market research, right? Like, especially if you're someone who's just starting out in entrepreneurship, you're just kind of getting a hang of, or you're at least thinking about starting a business, right? How do you even get that, you know, going. You could opt to hire a market research firm or consultant, but especially if you're just beginning, it is, in fact, entirely impossible to just conduct the research yourself, right?
It also sounds expensive.
It also sounds kind of expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, many retailers prefer to own their market research process as they enjoy spending time with customers and learning more about how customers view their business, right? So if you're wearing the researcher's hat yourself, you should at least know that there are two types of market research. There's primary and secondary research. So start off generally by reviewing secondary first, right? Do secondary research first. Mm. So that's looking at industry reports, it's looking at trends, it's looking at case studies or news articles. But by establishing with, by starting with this established data that someone else has collected, you at least learn more about how you would like to conduct your primary research, which most likely, let's be real, is going to take a little bit of a longer time, and also it's going to be maybe slightly more expensive.
So once you've done all that, next you have to go down into the trenches and study the market directly, which sounds way tougher than what it was earlier. Customer surveys, for example, are a great way to gather data on your target market. Depending on the questions you ask in your survey, you could not only understand your target market and its competitiveness, but also get feedback on your product. So several free tools such as Google Forms and SurveyMonkey are available to help you conduct customer surveys. If you use them, if you already have an engaged audience, such as an active email list or social following, then it's applicable.
Yeah.
But if you don't have an audience yet, then share the survey in relevant Facebook groups and online forums and Slack channels. We don't use Slack as much here, but it's a good tool.
Yeah. WhatsApp groups, I guess.
Oh, WhatsApp groups. Yeah, yeah, same thing. If you need to get the survey out to more people, though, then pay for a service like Google Surveys, which also allows you to add targeting parameters to get more specific and relevant insights.
You could also just do customer interviews, right? Just have little one-on-one direct conversations with customers. And since these are one-on-ones, they can actually provide unparalleled insights about your consumers, their shopping motivations, and feedback on your brand and products. So for example, even paying attention to the language that your target shoppers are using during the interview could help you create audience resonating market copy and store layouts, right? But the key with that is not to just ask yes or no questions. Ask open-ended questions that encourage these interviewees to give longer responses, right? So for example, instead of asking them, do you prefer to pay wave or do you prefer to use your PIN when paying, ask them what they think about contactless payments in general. Open it up, you know? Mm-hmm. And making this kind of subtle change in the way that you frame your interview questions hopefully gets the interviewee thinking, and that can give you some pretty excellent insights. Also, they don't have to take too long, you know, like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And you can even incentivize customers for the surveys or the interviews with something valuable for taking the time to respond to you. It could be anything from a gift card to a free product or even a lifetime membership.
That not taking too long is so important, because if any survey takes more than like 5 minutes for me, I'm
lose
like,
interest.
I lose interest. I'm like, there's way too many questions.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's important to say that customer reviews can also offer a treasure trove of actionable consumer insights. And you don't have to stop at studying your own business. Analyze competitor reviews can tell you what customers like and dislike the most about them, since you're in the same field, and what they commonly complain about and how those retailers handle negative reviews. What's more, the insights you uncover here can guide your product creation and give you ideas for improving the customer experience. Make sure you gather reviews from various channels such as social media and review sites, because having a large and diverse pool of customer reviews coming from people who represent your customer base helps reduce the odds of bias in review analysis, which is an important thing. It's also helpful to study reviewer profiles, so record reviewers' age and location, gender, items purchased, and date of purchase. And this extra layer of data will help you identify just a few trends based on consumer profiles themselves.
Yeah. So you're not just generalizing based on what you think is going on, right? There's also this thing called contextual inquiry, and this is basically observing and interviewing people while they're performing tasks in context. So for example, you could ask a participant to describe how they navigate your point of sale system, right? And so through that and learning how they use your product or use your system, you can learn how they feel about, you know, your store, your products, your purchase processes. And by observing them, you can even look at their nonverbal cues, like their body language as well, which could help you to track and understand their habits and how their mood changes as they interact with a product display or an in-store event. And they're also not that formal. You know, you don't have to be too intense about it. So maybe that might help you get your hands on like more realistic data.
prodding without pushing, I guess.
Yeah, just the, looking from afar and taking note of what's going on.
Another useful market research method is to send undercover researchers as customers to stores. This sounds like such a spy
no, but,
thing.
But, you know, it's helpful.
It's helpful. To yours and to your competitors to evaluate store operations and customer experience. So secret shopping gives you the benefit of learning from interacting with store employees in real time. It also helps you study your competition and access information only available to their customers. And I think the most important of all is that mystery shoppers can study any and every aspect of customer experience, including factors like greeting and wait time, staff knowledge and helpfulness, product variety and availability, and even store design, including the cleanliness, the product displays, window displays, and how helpful it is to navigate all those things. So you can always pre-script the visit by asking researchers to evaluate specific details, or you can even keep it open if you want, and encourage them to share whatever they have experienced and whatever they find. And secret shopping isn't limited to store visits. That's another thing. So mystery shoppers can buy and return merchandise to understand how a store handles return exchanges. They can also make phone calls or contact specific departments via website forms or emails to evaluate that performance.
Yeah. And there's also always focus groups as well. That's also super helpful. So like just a group of, I don't know, maybe 6 to 10 people in order to gather feedback on a product, service, idea, even marketing campaign from them. Now, when you are compiling a focus group, generally speaking, you should try to select them based on like their demographic traits as well, just to be helpful.
Yeah.
And then script your questions beforehand. So you should get responses from all the participants in the focus group. And they're fairly low cost but high accuracy market research method because they're delivering insights in the respondents' own words as well, right? Here, if you wanted to, you could also even hire an agency to conduct these focus groups, or you can even do it online and create a little online group for learning consumer thoughts on whatever you want.
Which might be slightly more convenient and cheaper, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Also take a look at sales records, which is a big thing. This involves studying customer and sales information already available and works best for established retail stores. These sales records should cover customer purchase dates and amount, payment method, returns, and other information, and provide like just this gold mine of data for everyone. The data is also proprietary and unique to your business. No one else has that information. So analyze it to identify your loyal customers and customer favorite products, and use the insights to gain to plan market approaches that will most likely resonate with these customers.
And, you know, if you have like a brick and mortar store, or even if you have customer service representatives or some kind of, you know, person, ask your own employees, ask your own sales associates for their findings on the floor. You know, it could be commonly asked questions from customers, could be their own observations and customer behavior. Your own staff research can uncover insights that not only help you better understand your customers, but also learn how effective your visual merchandising, your store layout, your Instagram layout, your sales promotions are. By asking your staff to observe these, you can also, as a little bonus, train them to even upsell and create hot selling product bundles as well. So, in a nutshell, market research and consumer research is essential.
Yep.
So it also never ends, and you should conduct it on an ongoing basis because the market does change really frequently, and you need to be on top of those changes to stay ahead of the curve. Now, you may be thinking, gosh, there's a lot of avenues to collect data
from.
There's a lot of data to sort through. And it's pretty tough. So where do you even start, right? Well, after the break, we'll be speaking to Julie Ng, CEO and co-founder of Vase.ai, an AI-powered research platform that aims to deliver extensive insights into consumer behavior for businesses and give them the edge they need to make the most strategic business decisions in just 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So do stay tuned to Enterprise Biz Bytes. For now, here is Knock on Wood by Eddie Floyd.
Bribe-free ministers? BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Christine Wong, and
Arvind Viraj.
Today, we're talking everything about consumer research, why it is extremely important, and all the different avenues you could go down in collecting the sweet, sweet data. If you want to get in touch with us about this topic, you can reach us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, joining us on the line to share her thoughts on this topic is Julie Ng. She is the CEO and co-founder of Vase.ai. She is going to share some insight on the power of consumer research. I think before we get started on research specifically, Julie, just want to get this out of the way. Do you think there's ever a one-size-fits-all marketing plan?
If there is, there wouldn't be so many marketing agencies around the world. So I unfortunately don't think so. Primarily because if you look at marketing, it's about communication with people about products and services. And the only way there is a possibility of a one-size-fits-all marketing plan is when everyone, all of us, both of us think exactly the same and prefer the same thing, which we probably know is not true. And the world would be less fun if that's the case. So there is, however, some recipe behind building a marketing plan that has a higher chances to transfer into other products and services of similar nature. So going back to the idea, marketing is about communication with people about our products and services. If a business is targeting the exact same audience as another business, then technically speaking, and the marketing plan of communicating to those audiences is working, and yes, the marketing plan would likely be transferable for the second business of the same target audience.
Mm-hmm. So, Julie, how has marketers' approach to consumer insights changed, especially over the pandemic?
So more marketers are now willing to admit that they don't really necessarily know what the consumers are thinking. That's the main change that we see. I like to think that the first steps towards solving a problem starts with self-awareness. So only when we realize that there is a problem, we do not know about what consumers are thinking, then it would prompt us to really think deeper about what is their solution to address this problem. So since the pandemic, we saw really a heightened awareness about, okay, I don't know what the consumer wanted. So how can I gather the insights, the information, the data around what consumers are thinking? More marketers we see are recognizing the impact that consumer insights can really help them to get clarity and certainty to form a better marketing and product plan. So instead of going straight into planning like usual and act on the marketing plan, we do see more marketers step back, put consumer insights gathering as part of the key step in their planning. So and now, you know, it's not just Malaysia itself, you know, the world itself, we would easily say this is an uncertain world. So it's really, really hard to plan. I totally agree, in the shoes of marketer, it's very hard to plan in the uncertain world. So we do see that more marketers are using consumer insights to help them to be more certain, to get more clarity about what the consumer wants.
Okay. I mean, Julie, before the break, we covered so many different ways of conducting consumer research. What would you say is the most effective way of doing it? Is there just one, or maybe are there multiple methods you'd like to highlight?
The most effective way of conducting consumer research is, I would define it as taking the lowest resources to understand a consumer. People, so we all have a lot of interest, preference, behavior. So it really depends on which part about consumer that you would like to understand. Then there is different ways that would most effectively gather those insights. So I could give an example. In WAS per se, we specialize in understanding what people think. And what people think is, we believe, is a precursor to how we act. So we would like to say that if you capture what people really think about, you get to predict their behavior. So in order to know what people think, unless we are like robots in the West world, we need to have a conversation with them by asking questions. So in WAS, we figured out the most effective way to have multiple conversations at the same time. For example, we have online survey to have 1,000 multiple conversations at the same time with different people in order to understand what they think. So quick answer to that, there are different most effective ways depending on what kind of data you would like to collect.
Mm-hmm. So, and how fast do businesses need to act on consumer research?
I like to say as soon as possible, but I definitely also need to define what do I mean by action. Action could mean a lot of people associated with making a decisions about, let's say, how a marketing campaign should go. But it could also mean scheduling a discussion session to evaluate how does a new consumer insights about our customer means to us. Or it could also mean sharing the new consumer insight with the entire company, so everyone has now this new knowledge behind their mind that could help them to shape their decision-making.
Mm-hmm. I also have to imagine that technology has really helped in this case, you know, with all this information and data that you need to collect. How would you say technology has changed the way that businesses approach consumer data and research?
So we all know technology is super proliferated with our life now. Each of us maybe have 1, 2, or even 3 tech devices around us now. So we are leaving a lot of footprints in the tech world. When there are a lot of footprints on consumers that are being captured by technology, there are essentially more consumer data available to the business. But then I think the more interesting question here is, now there's so much data. Does businesses know what to do with so much data on hand? I would think that is the more interesting question here. So I increasingly see that, does the business actually go numb on so much data, or actually they go confused by the different seemingly conflicting data? So instead of being clearer, being more certain about consumer through all this data, I actually see more businesses get more confused because the data that they are seeing are conflicting with each other.
Okay, so how can businesses speed up their approach to utilizing data from consumer research?
There are two approaches that we believe could speed up utilizing data from consumer research. Okay, number one, we need to insert gathering data as part of the overall decision-making process before we finalize the plan, instead of an afterthought to evaluate after you finalize the plan. This is very important because we often find business having a super hard time trying to change the decision that they have made. And it makes sense to not change because it will bring extra confusion to the team that is currently executing. Second, we encourage adopting an agile and iterative framework to projects. For example, instead of setting a 3-month long of campaign in stone, we can consider adopting the agile method of performing weekly iteration. We look at the last week data that we are coming in, and this week, let's see if there's any decision that we need to change. So this two approach is what we see will help any business to significantly be more data-driven and consumer-driven than their competitions and reap the rewards of it.
And Julie, you also mentioned that companies can be really intimidated and confused by the amount of data that they get. So how can they clarify and sort data in maybe a more useful way?
Be intentional. So instead of just looking at the data and trying to find what we are looking for, we need to ask ourselves, what are we trying to answer here? What decision are we trying to make here? Start with that intention, then look at the data. Often that will be quicker to filter out, okay, this data not useful. I should only look at the third set.
And what are some other interesting uses for consumer research that businesses may not be capitalizing on?
One use case that I personally find effective for a business to use, but not really very popular, is using consumer research to gather ideas, not just validating it, but gather ideas. So I give an example. Recently, we have a political think tank who are using us to understand what are the issues that voters care about the most. Okay, now, typically, this kind of research will start with the think tank come up with a list of issues for the voters to choose from. And from that, the think tank will have a list from the most voted to the least voted. Okay, that's the traditional way. But in this case, instead of going that route, the think tank actually asks only one single question in the research, which is a open-ended question, no choices there, but a blank space for voters to write down what's the issue that's on top of your mind, right? After that, the think tank complete the research within a day, and from that 1,000 responses, they then come up with a list of issue and conduct the second research to ask people to vote. So we call this iterative research. So the idea is simple. You come into the research with the as few assumption and preconceived notion as possible. Let the consumer answers guide us. And usually we see that consumer answers would then inspire us with their thoughts. And this would be what we call the more accurate lens of consumer insights.
All right. And finally, Julie, what would you say to those who might argue that they don't currently have the bandwidth to conduct consumer research?
Use company like us. Okay. Joking aside. So I think bandwidth is something we can see. What does bandwidth mean? So when a company A say they have no bandwidth, maybe they meant, okay, if you can get it done within 1 week, I can. But to some other bigger companies, to them is, okay, if you can get it within 3 weeks, I can. So I think considering what the bandwidth is there. So I give an example. Our company helped do research as quick as hours, where the client only need to invest less than 5 hours of time. Is that bandwidth something a business potentially have? I think the bandwidth question here has been different definitions because of the technology we have is getting shorter and shorter bandwidth that you need. The investment you put now, we're going to save you 500 hours from trying to fix a mistake that you did without the data.
Interesting. All right. Well, thank you so much. That was Julie Ng, who is the CEO and co-founder of Vase.ai, to share some insight with us about the power of consumer research. That about brings us to the end of the show, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But on behalf of myself and Arvind Yuvraj, of course, do not go anywhere. After the 1 p.m. news bulletin is, of course, the Breakfast Grill replay. So MCE Holdings manufactures parts and accessories for automotive players like Perdua and Honda. In the second quarter, they reported a 232% year-on-year increase in net profit to 3.3 million ringgit. But with the ongoing Ukraine war, the end of SST exemption and supply chain disruptions, Dr. Go Kar-chun, Group Managing Director of MCE Holdings, is asked by The Breakfast Grill whether this growth is even sustainable. That's all coming up shortly, but for now, we shall leave you with the impression that I get by the mighty, mighty Boss Tones here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.